Completely.
Niharam.
Niharam.
Or
Eva,
Eva,
the light,
light.
Bhaskara,
Bhaskara,
the sun.
The sun.
Translation, only a rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed, devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will provide. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Purport, in the previous verse, Sukadeva Goswami gave the example that the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree may be completely burnt to ashes by a fire, although the creepers may sprout again because the root is still in the ground. Similarly, because the root of sinful desire is not destroyed in the heart of a person who is cultivating knowledge, but it was no taste for devotional service, there is a possibility that the sinful desires will appear. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Shreya Sritam Bhakti Mudasya Tevi Bho Tishanti Ye Kevala Bodha Lobdahe. Speculators who undergo great labor to gain a meticulous understanding of the material world by distinguishing between sinful and pious activities, but who are not situated in devotional service, are prone to material activities. They may fall down and become implicated in fruit of activities. If one becomes attached to devotional service, however, his desires for material enjoyment are automatically vanquished without a separate endeavor. Bhakti Paresha Anubhava Virakir Anyatra Chai. One has advanced to Krishna consciousness, material activities, both sinful and pious, automatically become distasteful to him. That is a test of Krishna consciousness. Both pious and impious activities are actually due to ignorance. He doesn't live in the empty, his eternal servant of Krishna has no need to act for his personal sense gratification. Therefore, as soon as one is reclaimed to the platform of devotional service, the relinquishes his attachment for pious and impious activities and is interested only in what will satisfy Krishna. This process of bhakti devotional service to Krishna relieves one from the reactions of all activities. Since Parikshit Maharaj was a great devotee, the answers of his guru, Sukadeva Goswami, concerning Karma Kanda and Gyan Kanda would now satisfy him. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, knowing very well the heart of a disciple, explain the transcendental bliss of devotional service. The word keshet, which is used in this verse, means a few people, but not all. Not everyone can become Krishna conscious. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and those who have seen perfection, hardly one knows him in truth. Practically, no one understands Krishna as he is, for Krishna cannot be understood through pious activities or attainment of the most elevated speculative knowledge. Actually, the highest knowledge consists of understanding Krishna. Unintelligent men who do not understand Krishna are grossly puffed up, thinking they are liberated or have themselves become Narayana and Krishna. That's ignorance. To indicate the purity of bhakti devotional service, the Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain. The fruit activities is full of philosophical speculation and is called pure devotional service. The Rupa Goswami further explains that bhakti is kleshagni subhada, which means if one takes to devotional service, all kinds of unnecessary labor and material distress cease entirely, and one achieves all good fortune. Bhakti is so powerful that it is also said to be moksha laguta prit. In other words, it minimizes the importance of liberation. Non-devotees must undergo material hardships because they are prone to commit sinful fruit of activities. The desire to commit sinful actions continues in the hearts due to ignorance. These sinful actions are divided into three categories, pataka, mahapataka, and atipataka, and also into two divisions, prarabdha and aprarabdha. Prarabdha refers to sinful reactions that from which one is suffering in the present, and aprarabdha refers to a source of potential suffering. When the seeds of sinful reaction have not yet fructified, the reactions are called aparabdha. Those seeds of sinful action are unseen, but they are unlimited and no one can trace when they were first planted. Because of aparabdha, sinful actions that have now fructified, one is seen to have taken birth in a low family to be suffering from its other miseries. When one takes to devotional service, however, all phases of sinful life, including prarabdha, aparabdha, and bija, are vanquished. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna tells Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, devotional service in relation to me is like a blazing fire. They can burn to ashes all the pure or simple activities supplied to it. How devotional service vanquishes the reactions of sinful life is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, in a verse spoken during Lord Kapila Dev's instruction to his mother, Devahuti. Devahuti said, "My dear Lord, if a person born in a family of dog eaters hears and repeats the chanting of your glories, offers respects to you, and remembers you, he is immediately greater than a Brahmana, and is therefore eligible to perform the sacrifices. Therefore, what is to be said of one who sees you correctly?" In the Padma Purana, there is a statement that persons whose hearts are always attached to devotional service of Lord Vishnu are immediately released from all reactions of sinful life. These reactions generally exist in four phases. Some of them are ready to produce results immediately, some are in the form of seeds, some are unmanifest, some are current. All such reactions are immediately nullified by devotional service. When devotional service is present in one's heart, desires to perform sinful activities have no place there. Sinful life is due to ignorance, which means forgetfulness of one's constitutional position as an eternal servant for God. And when one is fully Krishna conscious, he realizes he is God's eternal servant. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami comments that bhakti may be divided into two visions, as santata, devotional service that continues incessantly with love, faith and love, to kadachitki, devotional service that does not continue incessantly but sometimes awaken. Incessantly flowing devotional service, santata, may be divided into two categories, service performed with slight attachment and spontaneous devotional service. Intermittent devotional service, kada chitki, may be divided into three categories, ragabhasamai, devotional service in which one is almost attached, ragabhasa sunyasarubhuta, devotional service in which there is no spontaneous love but one likes the constant position of serving, and abhasrupa, a slight glimpse of devotional service. As for atonement, if one has caught even a slight glimpse of devotional service, all needs to undergo prayaschitta atonement are superseded. Therefore, atonement is certainly unnecessary when one has achieved spontaneous love and, above all, attachment with love, which are signs of increasing advancement in kadachitti. Even in the stage of avas rupa bhakti, all the reactions of sinful life are uprooted and vanquished. Srila Jiva Goswami expresses the opinion that the word karchena means that even if one has a desire to commit sinful actions, the roots of that desire are vanquished merely by Abbas Rupa Bhakti. An example of Bhaskar, the sun, is most appropriate. The Abbas feature of Bhakti is compared to twilight, and the accumulation of one's sinful actions is compared to fog. Since fog does not spread throughout the sky, the sun needs no more than merely manifest its first rays, and the fog simply disappears. Similarly, one has even a slight relationship with devotional service, all the fog of a sinful life is immediate. Translation: only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service. This is the sun can immediately dissipate a fog by its rays. So here talks about kevala bhakti or pure bhakti to the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva Krishna. And that destroys all sins, karchena. So, this sin, of course, as Prabhupada has explained in the purport, is divided into various stages. This is also explained in the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami. The immediate effects are the karmas. And the other stages are the desires to produce the karmas, and behind that, avidya. So these are the causes, you could say, of sin. And then the actual karma, the effect, is divided into four stages, or actually broadly two categories, aprarabdha and prarabdha, those that will be experienced in this lifetime, and those which we experience in future lifetimes, though the sin has already been committed in the past lifetime. So that means at any point in time, a certain amount of our karmas we experience, but others are waiting for us in future lifetimes. So the ones which are waiting are called aprarabdha, not to be experienced in this lifetime. So these are generally the two categories. But in the quote from Padma Purana mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, we have two other stages called Kuta and Bija, which are intermediate stages between the Aparabdha and the Prarabdha. So in other words, the Kuta is a grosser aspect of the Aparabdha, and the Bija is a subtle aspect of the Prarabdha. So in this way, the sins gradually begin to manifest from Aparabdha, Kuta, the Bija, and finally experienced. So all of these are destroyed by bhakti. But not only these, effects are destroyed, the desire to commit the sinful acts is also destroyed. So we have two distinct things. One is the cause and one is the effect. So the effect is the karma, such as the hellish punishment, etc. I'm taking an animal body, this is the effect. And we have other effects which are not even surfacing yet, but which will happen in the future. So all of these effects will be destroyed by bhakti. And, of course, we can say that prayaschitta will also destroy. Prayaschitta will destroy a particular karma of this lifetime, but not even completely, but it will alleviate it. It won't destroy all karmas of aparabdha and parabdha. Only a specific karma prayaschitta will relieve. Whereas the process of bhakti destroys aparabdha and prarabdha. The other processes, jnana and yoga, do not destroy the prarabdha at all. They will destroy the aparabdha. So therefore one has to suffer these karmas of this lifetime in the processes of jnana and yoga. So then, of course, this is not a good solution, as Parikshit pointed out, because again you'll commit a sinful activity. So then one has to go to the cause. So the cause of the karma is an act, and the cause of the act is a desire, called the papija. So this is also destroyed by the process of mukti. If jnana and yoga are done properly, eventually also this papija will get destroyed, because they can destroy the subtle body, etc., with all the desires in it. So this can also happen, but it is a slow process in jnana and yoga. And then the source of the desire is avidya, ignorance. So does that ignorance of the Supreme Lord, or the bahirmukha aspect of the jiva, not to recognize the Lord, but rather to think of himself, which is the cause of the desires, which is the cause of the activities, which is the cause of the karmas. So, all of three levels, the karma level, the desire level, and the avidya level, are destroyed by the process of bhakti. If jnana and yoga are also performed properly, yes, they can also destroy this. That is how they get liberation. If one is liberated, one has also destroyed this avidya. But in the processes of jnana and yoga, this is a slow process, and the process cannot be completed without recognition and worship of the Lord. So in other words, bhakti is also necessary in the jnana and yoga process in order for the person to get that liberation. So the process of bhakti does this without resorting to any other process. So this shows the superiority of bhakti. So if we do a pure bhakti, then of course the effect is most wonderful. If we do mixed bhakti, still we get effect. If we do secondary bhakti, in other words, we're doing jnana with a little bhakti, or karma with a little bhakti, it also has effect. If we do accidental bhakti, as in the case of Ajiva, it still has effect. So this is what is the abhas bhakti referred to in the purport. That's the weakest form of all. But even that has the effect of destroying the sins. So this seems a little improbable, because the abhas of bhakti can destroy all the sins, whereas it takes great endeavor in karma, jnana, and yoga to destroy sins. And karma yoga, of course, only a little bit of the sin is destroyed, not completely. So, and just an abhas or an accidental contact with bhakti will destroy all of the sins. That is quite extraordinary. And so that shows the great effect of bhakti compared to the other processes. So there's a quotation here in the purport from Bhagavad to show that a person who remembers the Lord, or chants the Lord's name, or somehow contacts, remembers something about the Lord, hears about the Lord, glorifies the Lord, etc., offers respect to the Lord, immediately they become greater than the Brahmana, and are qualified to do sacrifices. So what this means is all the karmas were destroyed, because technically the low-born person is not qualified to do sacrifice, because his karma is the wrong karma. He's a dog-eater by birth. So that's bad karma. But by remembering the Lord, or hearing about the Lord, or chanting the name of the Lord, then suddenly he's better than the Brahmana, and he can do all the sacrifices that a Brahmana can do. So that's the effect of bhakti. So now one may do it intentionally, but even unintentionally, especially the name in the case of Ajamil, even that will destroy all the karmas. So therefore, how much more effect intentional bhakti will do, as favorable bhakti, anukulya bhakti will do, much, much greater effect. So in other words, destroying the karmas and sins, etc., are not anything significant for bhakti to do, because even the abhasa bhakti, accidental bhakti, can do this. So this is the greatness of bhakti. So then we have stages above that, where we'll have other processes, and then what's called kadachitti bhakti. It's not constant bhakti, but it's bhakti done as a supplementary process to something else, such as karma yoga with a little worship of Vishnu, etc. So even that has power to remove sins. It's done intentionally also, but of course it's not constant, and it should be free of upperarms. And if we do constant bhakti, that is when it's a serious practitioner of bhakti, it is even better. But one could also have mixed bhakti there, with various karma or jnana, Mr. Bhakti or Yoga Mr. Bhakti. That also gives greater effect than the others, other types of bhakti. But the best is pure bhakti, unmixed with anything. That is, gives the best result. So what result that gives? It gives not only destruction of all karmas, desires, avidya, it also gives the highest goal of bhakti, which the other things, even mixed bhakti, do not give. So that is a special advantage of kevala bhakti. It gives one a situation of service with the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world, in a particular rasa, whereas mixed bhakti will not do that. Best one gets shanta rasa. So therefore, the ultimately kevala bhakti, or pure bhakti, is the preferred process over anything else.
You must truth to say that unless the soul stops the induction in the material world, kevala bhakti is not possible. Unless the soul stops interacting with the material world, kevala bhakti is not possible to attain.
No. We do pure bhakti in sadhana, and we're still in the material world. This is talking about sadhana, not prema.
What if one has any sadhana bhakti field ahead and he doesn't come to the higher level?
Well, the sadhana has a goal to it. If you don't get to the goal, then it's not complete. So you have to do the sadhana until you get the goal, which is bhava. And if you don't get bhava ever, that means you're doing it wrong. The process is not working properly if it doesn't go anywhere. Just like you can study first grade, and if you do first grade for 20 years, it means you're not something wrong. If you don't get to the second grade, there's something wrong. So if you do sadhana, sadhana, nothing happens, and you never get to bhava, then there's something wrong with the process you're doing. Well, both. In other words, the symptoms of bhakti are mentioned in the nectar of devotion, klesha, agni, subhada, etc. So within sadhana bhakti, the klesha, agni, destruction of karmas, destruction of desires should take place, and the good qualities should result. And if nothing happens, one stays exactly the same as one was 20 years ago. Then it means the process is done in the wrong way.
Association of devotees, how does it help to distance?
Well, everything helps. So in other words, we do everything that is recommended in devotional process. There's chanting, there's association of devotees, there's hearing, deity worship. All of these things are factors which help us advance. Though the prominence is given to the chanting of the name as the Yuga Dharma.
Yes, Krishna directly involved in this destruction process, or is energy only destroying?
Well, they're non-different. Bhakti and Krishna are non-different. So therefore, we can say that it's Krishna doing it. Which makes it different from jnana and yoga and karma, which are not the sroop shakti of the Lord.
Tantra sesha jivan bhagavatam ki jai, jivan bhagavatam ki jai, jivan bhagavatam ki jai.
பூஜை ரூம்ல இருக்காங்க.